Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Is The Bench.
The Bench.
On ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Good Monday morning, everybody. John and Lance along with Dell here on this Monday morning. What's going on, Lance?
Well, just another Monday, and we get to talk about some of the Last Dance and actually live sporting events for the first time. I know it's, we had the first individual live sporting events a week before with UFC 249. This week was, well, I shouldn't say the first because Korean baseball has been going on, but it happened so early in the morning that no one sees it. I watched my first team live sporting event with Bundesliga on Saturday, and as a matter of fact, I did make sure I was awake so I could watch the start of it. And I noticed a lot of people on social media were doing the same.
I actually watched NASCAR.
Okay.
Yeah, I watched Kevin Harvick. I watched from the green flag to the checkered flag. Okay.
Yeah, that's they're going to have their whole racing season. So yeah. I mean, they're doing their whole thing without fans.
They're doing like UFC Saturday and Wednesday, and NASCAR is doing Sundays and Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I also watched golf, watched Rory and DJ beat Fowler and Wolf in a match play for charity that raised over $4 million. And that was fun to watch guys that can actually play, as opposed to us watching us play. So that was neat. They're back, and Tiger and Phil and Peyton and Brady, I think, are next weekend now. So that'll be interesting to watch. So yeah, we're starting to get back.
Yeah, it's going to be a while before our team sports, we know that. But we have something to watch with Bundesliga. But baseball is going to tell you, it looks like, I'm starting to wonder if baseball is going to start after basketball. Basketball's coming back. Basketball's not letting that money leave. And frankly, I have a hard time believing baseball is going to lose $4 billion. That's what they're set to lose, is $4 billion. That number came out on, I think it was Friday. $4 billion is what baseball will lose if they don't play. I don't care how many Blake Snells there are. Baseball will just say, okay, beat it. We'll go without you. Because they're just not letting $4 billion in the grand scheme of things. People are, I don't think they think this through very clearly. I know there's a thought that it just goes all to the billionaire owners. No. This will have a huge impact if they don't get their $4 billion to sprinkle down into players, into workers, into bars, into restaurants around the park, into television stations, into media, into the fans. There's a lot of trickle down that will be lost in all of sports. The economists have already come out and said football will cost $12 billion between college and pro football. Baseball will be $4 billion. I mean, those numbers were pretty staggering when I heard them, John. I just never thought it would be that much. I guess I'd never really thought about it, but $4 billion at risk for baseball.
Well, I mean, when you talk about what's it worth?
It goes into a lot. Yeah,
do they make every year?
It goes into TV money.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it goes into TV money. It goes into concessions. It goes into, and that money really truly does get trickled down. I mean, there's a lot of people who are employed because of sports, and I mean we're people who are employed because of sports. There's a lot of people who are employed because of sports, either directly or indirectly, and that's why it's not just when people talk about, you're just getting this money to play a game. I know that's a simple way of looking at it. It's its own economy now. Sports is a separate, gigantic economy, as the billions will tell you. So it's not, I know it's we like to just break it down, and these guys are getting paid millions just to play a game, but this isn't just a game anymore. Not in real life, not when you see the real world implications of not having sporting events.
Yeah.
I don't think it's not a reach. Our friends Raheel and Barry Laminack aren't with us right now because of sports, because of the lack of sports. There's a direct correlation. So there is real world, you know, when there's no sports, the advertising slows down. There is a real world correlation, and that's why baseball has to get going. And you see the A-Rods and the Mark Teixeiras of the world. Now, they're not players. They're former players, and they're speaking out and saying, hey, you guys need to take a revenue split and let's get going.
Well,
let's get back.
Yeah, I don't know that you blame it on sports because all media. It's not direct. I mean, because when businesses shut down, then they don't advertise. So, I mean, I'm close to Channel 13, and they're doing the same. And it's not because of sports that the advertisers aren't coming.
Well, we don't have
there's no
sports.
Business.
Right,
yeah,
right.
But there's no business. So that's more of it, that businesses are closing. I mean, we could still, you know, we can still entertain and whatnot and, you know, have a show. If people were still advertising, then it would be fine. But people can't advertise right now. And hopefully that'll happen. That'll happen real soon. Last Dance, the last of the final parts, 9 and 10 last night. Very interesting. A lot more basketball than behind-the-scenes stories. But I remember the Steve Kerr. For those of you that haven't watched, don't want to give away too much, but this is something that's been in the news for a long time. Steve Kerr lost his dad in Beirut. He was the president of the university there, and he was shot. And I remember when
he was assassinated.
He was right. I mean, they had kidnapped the previous president of the university, and then they shot and killed him, Steve Kerr's dad. And I remember what a big deal it was when Steve Kerr at Arizona went to Arizona State. And they were chanting, I believe it was, where's your dad?
No. So what it was, I was waiting for that to come up because that's what I thought it was. I told my kids, I said, you're about to be really, really mad in a second. And they said, oh, because he got assassinated. Like after they saw it, I said, no, it's even worse than that. I don't want to say what it is. And then they never showed it. They never talked about it.
Not that.
Because I remember I remember watching when I was a kid in high school, the story about it where Steve Kerr broke down on the court. He went to Arizona. They went to Arizona State, and they chanted PLO, PLO at him.
Right.
They also chanted go back to Beirut, and there was one other horrific one that I just couldn't even believe that they were cheering. And, to this day, but they didn't show it on ESPN. They didn't even talk about it, which
no.
I guess the similarity was Steve lost his dad, Michael lost his dad. This was not a doc about Steve Kerr. I thought they might tell it as backstory, but they didn't even tell that story. But
that makes Arizona State look bad.
Well, well.
Yeah.
You know, right. If you have some fans that act like a-holes, then that's what it is.
It's amazing that you just – what the a-hole that sports can bring out in you, but that you would cheer when Michael Irvin is on the ground, laying on the ground, that you would chant PLO for a kid who lost his dad in Beirut.
Do you know what happened 4 years after he had lost his dad? That's the crazy thing. He lost his dad in 84. The chants didn't happen until 88.
Yeah.
I was reading the article yesterday. Let's see. It was, there was a handful of Arizona State students who chanted PLO at him. And why don't you join, and let's see, your father's history. And why don't you join the Marines and go back to Beirut, were the three things. He said, when I heard it, I just dropped the ball and started shaking. I sat down for a minute. I'll admit they got to me. I had tears in my eyes. For one thing, it brought back memories of my dad. But for another thing, it was just sad people would do something like that. And, that was a storyline. John, I was waiting to see if they would go through it, but they didn't get that deep.
Yeah. It's hard to believe that people would do that. but it happened to me one other time a couple of years ago, also at Arizona State, but that time it was just one or two people, so it wasn't noticed much. Saturday it was about 10 or 15 people in unison. Mm. Wow, just horrible. I mean, to a kid in college who lost his dad, that is just unbelievable.
Way to go, Arizona State.
Nice job, Arizona State. You gave us James Harden and Nat.
Well, I like Harden.
Well, yeah. No, I know.
Sounds like a negative the way you just said it.
Well, but, you know.
What about Brock Osweiler?
That's right. Oh, thanks.
Thanks, Arizona State.
Yeah. But also gave us Pat Tillman.
Yeah, that's true.
How about that? Great American.
Didn't they give us Phil Mickelson or just Phil's wife?
They gave us Phil's wife.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. They gave us Phil, too.
Probably.
He went to Arizona State.
Yeah, I think he did.
No, I don't know if she went to Arizona State. She was a Phoenix Suns cheerleader. But Phil went to Arizona State.
Yeah, that's what it was. So right, I thought yesterday's set of documentaries were tied up some loose ends. It ended up covering every championship season. They got to, and they did get to, and I'm glad they did, they really showed that that Indiana Pacers team was a really good, and that's a team that Michael even said, man, of all the teams that gave us the toughest time, he said it was the Indiana Pacers. And then he goes, well, and the Pistons. I mean, he had to acknowledge mm-hmm. the Pistons, but the Indiana Pacers, with the two Davises, with Derek McKee and Chris Mullen, and I mean, you want to talk about a deep team. That team was extraordinarily deep, the Indiana Pacers, at every position.
Reggie was just fire. I mean, he could knock one down from anywhere.
And you remember how they ran him off of picks? Jordan had to they had to decide how they were going to guard Reggie, because a lot of times Ron Harper had to guard him, because you take an offensive threat like Jordan, you can't have him dogging Reggie all over the court, because all that's going to do is wipe him out offensively. Mm-hmm. And so they had to be smart with how they did it, because Reggie would run you off of screen after screen, and his release was in the top five quickest releases.
Quick, unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, Steph's probably the fastest I've ever seen, but Reggie Miller was up there.
Yep. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, Steph's better, obviously. It would be, I mean, everybody talking about the Golden State versus this, and now Golden State has 73 wins, but they couldn't finish it. Actually, if you look at the playoffs and the regular season, the Bulls still have the greatest season ever, winning percentage-wise. I would love to see how Mike, I mean, look, the motivation here. Oh, yeah, I had to do it because George Karl didn't look at me or didn't talk to me in a restaurant, or Karl Malone won MVP, or whatever it was that motivated Mike. I could certainly see him going hard after Steph. I mean, oh, really? That little dude is going to – that little dude is what everybody's saying is the best in the game right now? Watch this. I could certainly say, man, I would love to see a matchup like that. Two totally different eras and styles. It would be interesting to see, with the way that those guys shoot, Golden State shoots, and the way the Bulls play defense, how what kind of series that would be. That's one matchup that I would, for over time, that I would love to see if you could move time and see those two teams at their peak playing each other.
Yeah, it would be pretty incredible. I think there's a lot to cover. It's 7:13 right now, and we get back. We'll get into some of that. We'll get into some of the other things that happened over the weekend. But there is a really good question. My son asked me a question. I guess there was something posed on the internet about LeBron era and Jordan era. And it's not direct LeBron and Jordan, so don't worry. It's not going to be a direct question there.
When we come back.
But it is a good.
Who's the greatest player ever?
I think it's amazing how. I want to get into extending eras, because something happened over the last 5 weeks that has never happened in the history of our lifetimes, basically in sports,
basketball.
In the history of our lifetimes. 7:13 right. Here on the bench.
Right. So I want to talk about Doc Linville right now. And I got my hair cut this week. I finally was able to get a haircut this weekend. and it was awesome. And it was, it's just so amazing. It is just so amazing how much more hair I have than I had before on the top of my head. I mean, I still have the same number because it was taken from the back and some of the sides, but it was taken individually. It wasn't cut like they used to do it. Man, it was just that, what a horrible process that was, and painful and everything else. And you needed, I mean, it was like surgery that you were getting over there. With Doc Linville, it was you sit in the chair for about 4 hours. There, minimal pain. Fred was back working that day. I was back working. I did it on Friday. Back working on Monday. A buddy of mine said, "Hey, his stepson, is going bald at 20 years old." And he said, "Well, I said, call Doc Linville. I'm telling you, you don't want to be a 20-year-old, 30-year-old without hair. This is so simple and so effective. The process is wonderful. The people are wonderful. It's affordable, all of those things. So if you're looking for the best way to get hair back, go to 975hair.com. That's 975hair.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5, 718-713-780-3776. If you want to get in here on ESPN 97.5, you want to talk about Kevin Harvick winning the, I don't know where it was or what it was. I don't know. All I know is cars were going around in circles, but Kevin Harvick was the one who finished first in that circle thing. And then Rory and DJ. Now, they were big favorites, dude. How about this? So, I mean, why Matt Wolf was there, I have no idea. And so he and Ricky are winning the whole way. They're actually leading. They won more early on. It was Rory and DJ, and they were big favorites, and they were winning. And then all of a sudden, here come Ricky and Wolf, and they start and they win a bunch of holes. And it comes down to the last hole, and it's worth $1.1 million. And whoever wins it, so they tie, and they go back and they play closest to the hole on a par three to decide who gets that last $1.1 million. And Ricky and Rory hits it closest, and they win. And this is how a bunch of bettors now, make no mistake about it, a bunch of people were betting on this. And if it was obvious who to pick, Rory and DJ are two of the best players in the world. Rory's the best player in the world right now. But all of a sudden, here come a bunch of bets with the sharps on Wolf and Fowler, because they know they're getting good odds and these kind of things, right? When it's an obvious, why are DJ and Rory matched up against Fowler and Wolf? Wolf showed early on that he couldn't play in this thing. He was really struggling early on, and then he started playing better. But this is how they decided, and all of these bets came down to one shot on a par three. And Rory hit it closest, and all that favorite money came in.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, really? This is how you're deciding this? This is how you're going to decide that all these bets? Because this would have caught, you know, how many people, maybe four people would have bet on this if we were in the regular season, and no one would have cared about this. Right. But right now, when there's nothing to bet on, there were a bunch of people betting on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Rory and DJ, the big favorites, ended up coming through on a closest to the hole. Anyway, so if you had that, if you had the other side, you were probably pissed. This is how you're deciding this. So that and that. Did you? What about Bundesliga? Tell me about how did my Wolves do?
So it was Bundesliga was interesting. It was I watched from start to relative finish. And I was really interested to see how the game would get started. Now, everyone there has been tested. Everyone there has been tested, yet they still wore masks. The people who were not in the game, the guys who were on the bench, they were wearing masks, and then as they made their way out of their locker room, and they're in the same tunnel together with the other team, and so they get onto the field, and what they had, and this is important because this is what we're going to see in like basketball. They were 6 feet apart. They had their own big comfortable chairs, basically, and they were about 6 feet apart with masks on, 6 feet apart across the area on the sideline. There's no fans, so it doesn't matter. So they're, you know, there's all these players are taking up all this space with their masks on. I took a picture and put it on Twitter. That's what's going to have to happen in the NBA, where they are jammed up to this day. I can't believe they haven't ever found a better way to do NBA seating where these players get jammed into those same tiny chairs. It was when there was a goal finally scored, it was noisy to an extent. There's no one in the stadium, but you can hear the field mics are picking up the team that scored first. I was watching one. I think it was Freiburg scored first in this other match that I was watching, and their people just went, you know, ballistic. Now, granted, there's no fans in the stands. It was a road game. But that is going to – I think there truly is – the home and road thing is really diminished, extraordinarily diminished.
Right. What about corner kicks? Are guys scrumming inside?
Oh, it's the soccer's no – Del, you didn't see any difference.
It hasn't changed, right? So
you didn't see any difference with the soccer,
did you?
So
why
are
we 6 feet apart on the sidelines?
That doesn't make any sense.
And grinding and bumping inside.
Well, so if you're not playing, you're not going to get – if somebody snuck under the radar, I guess, with the test.
I guess if you're not playing.
Yeah, and you're not playing, I guess that would be part of it.
Those guys are safe.
Yeah, the game is going to be the same. Yeah. Now, my thought was, and they said the managers could wear a mask if they wanted to or not. One guy started wearing one, and, you know, by the middle of the first half, it was already off. It's like the UFC. If everyone has been tested and they've all had that swab jammed into their brain, I don't understand. I understand caution, but, like, people freaking out because Joe Rogan was in the ring interviewing fighters, they've all been tested. So
right.
I didn't understand what the big deal, why people were making a fuss about that.
Right. Joe Rogan, apparently, I didn't see it, but afterwards, he's standing right next to the guy, and he's doing a regular
interview. Like to, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And instead of standing six, you know, I'm watching right now on ESPN, you know, they got the long boom mic where you got the extender where who's ever interviewing you is far away. But here's the thing is I sent an email, a text to you and some other people today. The microphone is right next to his mouth. So the next guy that you go up to, this guy was just spitting into this microphone. And so that's being carried to the next person that you interview. While you're standing far away, there's got to be some way where we can figure out, I guess, or we just don't care.
Well, I think it could be cleaned off camera, too.
Well, right. I mean, but you're going to have to sanitize it after or disinfect it after every single interview.
Yes, right. 100%.
Right. And but those mic covers, those condoms that you put on the microphones, those are cloth and maybe holding stuff in that you can't see and whatever. Anyway, so, yeah, but it's just so funny. Make sure everybody stays 6 feet apart, and then you're inside on a corner kick, and everybody's rubbing faces.
Play sports at 6 feet apart. No reason even – that's not the case. It is if you're not in the middle of the action, I think they still want you at 6 feet. I get it. That's fine. You want to be the whole just-in-case thing. It's just that if you're all getting tested, you've all been quarantined, and you all tested negative – and I don't know, you know, if there's a test right before the game or whatever, or I guess before game day, maybe they tested them 14 days ago and then they quarantined, and maybe their thought or their concern is, hey, one of these guys might have snuck out,
or someone bringing you your food has it,
yeah.
Or somebody making your bed has it, or somebody. Right.
That's you might be answering your own question there.
Right.
So,
there's. There's a thought. It's just so funny. Well, make sure you stay 6 feet apart, and then let's all scrum in front of the goal. Okay. All right.
Well, they have to if they're going to play their sport.
Well, right, and that's going to be basketball too.
Yes.
Which is why golf and baseball are much better suited for this, and which, you know, should be getting started. Golf is obviously going to get started, and obviously NASCAR, you're in a car by yourself, so that's that. You know what? You're not bumping and grinding on somebody.
Baseball is going to be a financial. Well, I say it's going to be financial. You have players who, Blake Snell. I can't really. He's his own guy. I'm not going to put. And of course, Bryce Harper is going to agree with Blake Snell because that's how Bryce Harper rolls. But that is the sport. Golf is the safest. It's an individual sport. But from a team sport standpoint, yeah, obviously baseball has the biggest advantage because you're not in close proximity. You don't have to be in close proximity. And I do think that you can kind of distance in a dugout. I don't think that's a huge concern as long as you're diligent. I don't think that's a big concern.
Right. All right, 713-780-3776, 727 here on ESPN 97.5. Your league, Lance, congratulations. More nice job. More racism going on. Congratulations, Lance, in your league.
Hmm?
And we'll have to talk about it on the other side. Congratulations, Lance.
What did my
you
league
and your
do?
League doing it again. We never had these problems in the XFL, did we? 728. Let's take a break and we'll get to that on the other side.
Is that thing Oliver Luck suing?
No, that's not it. That's not it at all. It's different.
ESPN 97.5 is more talk and less commercials, which means more sports talk for you.
That's awesome.
That's just sick.
However, it does mean less pee time for the hosts.
I can't hold it in anymore.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be fine with this. ESPN 97.5.
There's a little pee coming out of me right now.
Ew. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back. Del, how much NASCAR did you watch? You watch all the race? Yeah, probably, huh?
I watched a couple laps.
You did?
I wasn't all in on NASCAR. I just checked it out to see how it would look, and obviously it doesn't really matter if there are no fans. It's just interesting to watch something that a big super speedway with nobody in it, but it was whatever.
Yeah, I know. That's the first race I've actually ever watched, and the cars, they just go around a lot. That's about it. I don't know.
That's insightful.
I mean, I was with some people that are real NASCAR fans, and I was like, this is fun. But I'm watching Will Perdue. Right? Was Will Perdue even mentioned in this thing?
Very briefly.
I don't even know that he was. How about Craig Hodges, Will Perdue? Who was that Jack guy? Remember Jack? He was Michael's sidekick. He was the white guy.
Jack Haley.
Not even mentioned in this thing. And I thought the only reason he was on the team is because Mike liked him. Maybe I think they played golf together or something.
Was he with Mike?
Huh?
Was he with Mike?
I thought he was Dennis's guy.
He was a what?
I thought he was Rodman's guy because they're in San Antonio together as well.
Oh, he was Rodman's
guy.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I knew that he was. I thought he was Mike's guy. He was Rodman's guy. Okay.
Well, how come he couldn't control him then? Chicago Bulls tenure. He was drafted by the Bulls in 87. After playing elsewhere, Haley returned to the Bulls as a free agent in 95 and was a member of the 95-96 Bulls team. But that was when he returned there when Rodman
did.
He was probably Rodman's personal valet, like, hey, let's bring him on to kind of keep Dennis in line.
They said even if you just type in Jack Haley, Dennis Rodman, former Bulls forward Jack Haley, best known for his close relationship with Hall of Fame teammate Dennis Rodman, this is about his obituary because he died in 2015.
Ooh.
But, yeah, they were good friends.
He died in 2015?
Yeah. Dang, wow. I didn't know that. Wow. Heart disease.
How about Phyllis George died?
Yep.
That's a shame.
So that's one of the things about the Jordan game, by the way, I mean about the documentary yesterday. So this is what I wanted to get to. I was thinking about there was one of the things that's quasi important, I guess, is that we have a debate going on that stretches across generations with Jordan and LeBron. I don't really think it's much of a debate. I think Jordan's clear one, and then I think LeBron has overtaken Kobe. Has taken Kobe in the pantheon of recency. I think there's obviously a debate to be had. The Kareem people and Wilt Chamberlain people and the guys, you know, I think in a generation even further back have legitimate arguments that they'll never have the firepower because there's just not enough video. Even with Kareem's greatness, you're not going to see a lot of those games. Basketball was not widely televised at that particular time. So that's just one of the – and there wasn't documentary features being made on Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And you can go find some stuff, but Snacks got – enthralled with Wilt Chamberlain for a while and loved watching all the Wilt Chamberlain stuff. I think Wilt Chamberlain was one of the most interesting NBA players from a stardom standpoint, probably that's been out there that a lot of people still don't know. And you wouldn't know unless you go seek it out. But what Jordan was able to do was he was able to take his greatness, considered by anyone who watched him coming up, you kind of just say, yeah, Jordan is the greatest. Most people do. And yet there is a group of 20-somethings who don't really have a direct connection with Jordan. And I think there's just always the assumption that whatever your group is always the best. And that's natural. Anybody who my generation of baseball, my generation of basketball, my generation of football player, whatever I have is the greatest. And what this documentary did was it extended the reach of Michael Jordan's legacy. And this has never been the case in anything else. Name something else that has been able to take everybody's legacy has a start point and then has what is not a finite end point, but there are there's a point where it begins to become blurred and there begins to be a lack of memory of how great a player was. And it's natural. Everybody runs into that. Father time ends up dulling the end point of their greatness. And it's carried further by people who remember more, or it's not carried as far because of just society just kind of forgets them. Jordan's has extended well beyond, I think, every other athlete in every other sport other than Tyson, who gets remembered for, frankly, a very small section of greatness. Mike Tyson was truly great from about 85-ish when he was really headed up the ladder towards a championship, from about 85 to about 90. Was Mike Tyson's greatness. And he really, frankly, wasn't as great. Wasn't nearly, actually, less than 90. Because Tyson wasn't as great after Customato died. So it's a much smaller sample size that people have extrapolated. With Jordan, this documentary, what it did, and the interesting thing has been watching young players talk about Michael Jordan like they have a greater appreciation. This expanded his greatness and the memory of Michael Jordan into 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 20-year-olds. Michael Jordan hit reset on his legacy in some regards, I think, with The Last Dance, John, because it allows people who never got to see Jordan, it allowed them to truly see Jordan. I mean, we can get into who he was as a person. I want to do that in a little bit too. But Michael, who else has ever had this opportunity to really give a full, in reality, 7.5 hours of actual TV time to one guy's legacy? This is a tremendous advantage that Jordan has.
Well, I don't know that anybody else you could. I mean, well, there's, I guess, it, you know, if Ovi overtakes Gretzky for goals, which is a possibility now over the next 4 or 5 years, that he could become the greatest goal scorer ever, then a Gretzky documentary, a 10-part documentary on Gretzky, could wake everybody up to Gretzky's just unbelievable. I mean, Gretzky to that sport is like
to that
Michael
sport.
Jordan.
Jordan, yeah. Transcended sport, though.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the greatness in the sport.
Yeah.
And Gretzky was. Gretzky was, is the greatest. And Ovi can, you know, he's got one, and Gretzky won four. I mean, everything about it. Gretzky was just the best. And I don't know that it's even arguable. But this generation doesn't know Gretzky, and maybe a kind of documentary like that in baseball, I guess, if we Babe Ruth, but you see him running around with his little tiny steps and how fat he is, and you go, oh, come on, really?
Who's the GOAT? Who's considered the GOAT in baseball? You don't really have one.
It's Babe Ruth. Oh, it's not even close. It's Babe Ruth.
And that was during a dead ball era. That's why it's not even comparable to Jordan, because it's hard for people to take that as serious as you know what I mean. And in football, a guy like Barry Sanders is starting to become muted, where people are going to forget and don't know that Barry Sanders. You can see the highlight runs, but then. You know, but then you can have arguments about Barry Sanders and Emmitt Smith and Walter Payton. And even there, I don't think it's really super clear cut.
Well, I think the GOAT, the greatest player of all time, is Jerry Rice.
Yeah, see, and I mean, you could say that. Other people would, you know, say it's Tom Brady. No.
Tom Brady is right. The greatest player is Jerry Rice. The GOAT is Tom Brady.
But you'll have some people who argue Randy Moss is better than.
Ooh,
Jerry
that's
Rice.
A hard argue. That's a tough
I'm just
argue.
Telling you, I've seen it and heard it.
Yeah.
I've been in the middle of one of those. It's, right, you know, to me, Moss quit on teams.
People say it's LeBron. People argue about LeBron. And, I mean, you can argue about anything.
But not to get too far off the point here, the point is Michael Jordan, who's considered the greatest in all of sports, you know, maybe all of sports, Michael Jordan's legacy, where everyone else is going to fade because of time, it's just the passage of time. Michael Jordan had a chance. His legacy just got reset by a 10-part documentary that, with TV commercial breaks, lasted over 7.5 hours, and it gave you an insight into what an absolute killer he was. A winner, a killer, all this stuff. Some of the negative. You didn't see all the negative, but some of the negative. You had an opportunity to. He had an opportunity in the midst of a pandemic where everyone's watching. It's the most watched documentary in a primetime spot that people are watching live and not just on demand, as a collective whole, Jordan's legacy just got extended to a brand new group of people.
Where did you get that 7.5 hour number?
Well, I'm just figuring about 15 minutes of commercial time. It's probably less. I just rounded it.
Oh.
Four commercial breaks at about 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes.
12 times 10. Okay, I think it's less than that, but okay. Oh, no. All right.
Yeah,
I mean,
no,
it was 10 hours. It was 10 hours.
I know it was 10 hours, but you had about 15 minutes per hour were commercials.
Okay, I don't think – okay, whatever.
I subtracted two and a half hours.
Now, remember this, though. It's only 20 years later, and in another 20 years – now we're going to this will be in posterity, and you can always go back and watch the documentary. I don't know if in 20 years that generation is going to watch the Michael Jordan, but there's going to come there will be another one that comes along. LeBron didn't come along too much later. There will be somebody that comes along, and everybody's and then the argument is going to open up. Now at least it's documented, and that's what the documentary does. At least it's now documented what Michael Jordan's greatness. And whatever generation it is can go back and watch. And maybe in another 20 years when somebody does come along, maybe it will happen again. Maybe they'll go back and watch Michael Jordan and go, wow, wait a minute.
Maybe our
guy isn't the best.
Maybe so. But what my point is, I've got a 9-year-old daughter who watched this all 10 episodes. I've got my 9, 11, 13,
with
15.
With the dirty words in it?
Yeah. She would just look at me every time one was said. But you got kids from 9 to 15 all watching and all in amazement. And so now when they're 40 years old, when my 15-year-old is 40 years old in 25 years, look how long that spans. It spans from 1984 then to 2045.
Like, well, that's funny. Because
that's 60 years.
And they can feel like, even though their guy is LeBron, they can almost feel like with this 10-part series, like, oh, no, you guys don't know nothing about Michael Jordan.
Oh, and I hear Alec arguing against LeBron with his friend Lucas every other day they argue.
Yeah.
But some bad news came out for LeBron people who – and really it's not LeBron people. It's NBA people from today who argue – NBA fans, I should say, who argue about how much better the league is. 538, which is an analytics site, which is the godfather of analytics site in sports, basically, when it comes to all, you know, Nate Silver's spot, shows that the competition level that Jordan faced was better by the numbers through analytics than the era that LeBron has faced in terms of the playoffs, which is something that has always been kind of a default argument that the current NBA has always tried to claim, the fans have always claimed. And I think most of us that have watched both eras recognize the fact that just the competitive nature of the 90s, of the 80s and 90s, but I think the basketball late 80s into the 90s continued to elevate because Barkley was in his prime, Stockton, Malone, Drexler, Olajuwon, David Robinson. I mean, all these unbelievable players. And that combined with rules that allowed for greater physicality, you really, it was, and the money wasn't as big a, the money wasn't as big a thing. You made your money, you made whatever you made, but it was a big deal to an extent, but not like now. Now it rules everything. Whatever your contract numbers yeah. are, it's all we talk about. It rules everything. And this bag and that bag, the Pacers wanted to beat your ass, and they were really, the Pacers were really, really good. The Utah Jazz were really, really good. There are championship teams that didn't get the title because they just couldn't, because yep. Jordan was there.
744 ESPN 97.5. When we come back, we'll talk about Lance's racist league. I promise we'll do that next right here on
the league that's trying to make it better.
Oh, trying to make it better, but you just can't because you can't get out of your own way. I mean, it's just horrible. And here's the deal. Here's the deal is right now, I want to talk to you guys about there is a company, and it's the MMA lawyers. And the MMA lawyers are outstanding. And what they're doing is insurance companies are trying to, and they're working you. And insurance companies will try any means possible to not pay you off because that's how they make money. They want to take your money, and they don't want to pay you. Listen. And there's a rainy season coming up. We've got floods, hurricanes coming up that season. How about how bad it's been, and yet we got this to look forward to. We got a local law firm. ESPN listeners, you got somebody that wants to fight for you, and it's the MMA law firm. They specialize in insurance dispute litigation, but they're the attorneys for ESPN Houston listeners, so they can help in any legal matter. Dram shop, pharmaceutical law, medical devices, serious personal injury, 18-wheeler injury. But if you have a claim, if you have a claim against an insurance company and they're acting in bad faith, you could be entitled up to three times your damage amount. Searching for bad faith acts is a standard in the MMA law firm investigation. If you're in this situation, head to largelossattorneys.com. If you have any kind of business claim, any kind of home claim, any kind of commercial claim, whatever it is, and you have a claim and you're not getting paid, largelossattorneys.com.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Yeah, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5. Yeah, we're forgetting Tiger Woods had the same kind of effect on his sport. And what's telling is that after Jordan left, the popularity of the sport, somebody says, you know, the NBA at that time became more popular than the NFL. And I don't know that we can prove that claim or not prove that claim, but it certainly did. What did David Stern say? There were like 85 countries, and then all of a sudden there were 210 countries that the NBA was played in. And it was all because of the Bulls, and it was all in large part because of the Bulls and Michael Jordan. But it became worldwide. Tiger had that same kind of effect.
Yeah, really the only, did. With all due respect to Gretzky, Tiger's the guy. I was telling my kids about Tiger. I said, what you have with Jordan, the only other person that I know of that was like Jordan, we were talking a little bit about Jordan after the series was over, I said, was Tiger Woods. Because Tiger also, you know, had kind of a side of competitiveness where it wasn't always nice. But from an early, I said, he was just truly great, truly athletic, more athletic than the other people in his league, the same way Jordan was, and then had a competitive streak that was just unrivaled. He would have gone down as Jordan had he I think had he not, you know, there's no way to know if he would have won championships if 2008 stuff hadn't happened, because he hadn't won one for a little. He wasn't the same player at that time. He wasn't playing the same level. He had some injury issues. But, you know, you do wonder if the stuff that happened with Tiger Woods in 08, if that didn't maybe take away three more majors from him, four more majors, who knows? I don't know if there's no guarantee he would have won them, but.
There was a precipitous decline.
Yeah, there was.
After. And, so his personal, and we've seen guys with personal problems, and, you know, injuries probably played a role in it, but. The scandal had a huge, huge impact on everything about him. Everything about him. All right, let's get to, because of David says, hey, what happened to Lance's Racist League? Well, I'll tell you what happened to Lance's Racist League.
How about it's going to be disappointing for you.
How they're so poor at being able to get, Del, are you offended by the lack of minorities in critical, the coaches, GMs? And now you're going to get draft picks if you hire a minority as a coach or a GM?
I'm a little offended that they put this into place just now, because my favorite team is at the forefront of hiring minorities, whether it be Chris Greer as their general manager, Brian Flores as the coach. Maybe they assume, hey, you got so many of the Texans picks, we're going to put this in place now so you can't get any more first-round picks. It sucks. Whether the Dolphins have to fire Chris Greer and Brian Flores, then rehire them so they can get more picks.
You've already got
about.
A million picks. More, Del.
We're at the forefront. We are trailblazers, so we should get more picks.
Well, here's the thing. What about the Steelers? They've had an African American head coach for how long? Do they get picks now? I mean, your league is so unbelievably insensitive.
How is this, Del? Can you explain to me? Because I don't know what John. My league is actually promoting and aggressively promoting the concept.
Are they?
And then he's saying it's insensitive to white coaches?
No, what he's saying is, do you think the NBA need and their ownership and their teams need
governorship?
Whatever you'd like to call it. Do they need incentives to hire African Americans in positions of power? Do you think, or minorities in positions of power?
No.
Do you think the NBA needs that? No.
Because they're not racist.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And your baseball league doesn't catch it because black people don't play baseball, so they don't have to worry about it.
Bo Porter, thanks.
Well, what happened to him? And what happened to him?
Who's at the forefront?
Dusty Baker,
Cecil Cooper,
welcome.
Dusty
Astros.
Baker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dusty Baker, Cecil Cooper, what?
Tony Sipp. Ooh.
No, he's a player.
Right?
We gave him a lot of contracts.
Tony Kemp, and Tony's, all the Tonys.
Are either one of the team anymore?
Michael
Brantley.
Bob Watson.
Yeah. Well, he's no longer with us. Shout out to Bob Watson. The NFL is dumb.
Jordan.
No, he doesn't count.
Oh.
He doesn't count. The NFL is embarrassing. This is an embarrassing display on their part. It really is. It really is. We're so bad at this, despite the rule we put in place years ago, that we now have to incentivize teams with draft picks to help it along.
If you say you'll just give them $250,000 in cash,
it's embarrassing. You're bribing teams.
But the league
teams.
Said we will pay half the salary.
We will give you extra dollars on your salary cap if you will hire minorities. Is that what there is? Is that what this is?
So I'm listening this weekend to our station here, and ESPN National was on. There was a little girl. Her name is Courtney. She sounded like she was about 12. She was so morally outraged by this little white girl. Morally outraged by how the NFL has and what an insult it. And it's just, to me, when I first saw it, I just laughed. I kind of scoffed. I'm like, you guys, you know, that is so. It is kind of insulting if you want to know the truth. Listen, we'll give you some draft picks if you'll just take on. What? I mean, honestly, how about just hire? There are a lot of good candidates out there. How about actually. Here's the thing about it, though, and this is true, is it's a bunch of old white guys. Who do they relate to? Other old white guys. Who do they feel comfortable with? Other old white guys. That's what they – and it's just – that's
– Well, that's a little antiquated. I mean, most of the coaches
really? You mean 70-year-old white guys don't feel comfortable with –
No, you mean like Cliff Kingsbury and Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur? That's a little antiquated.
Well,
everyone wants the young guy now. young guys are getting hired. We're not seeing rich
those guys
co-tights
that you
and,
just mentioned are all white guys. So,
okay, but they're not the old white guy. The old white guy narrative is getting old.
But look at GMs. Look at listen. These old white guys. Listen, what you need is you need some more minority ownership is what you need. That would be unbelievable if you were able to somehow be able to pry these, but they're all ATMs. They're all money machines, all these NFL teams. So there's literally no chance unless you expand unless they Donald Sterling it. There's zero chance that you're going to be able to pry these away from guys. But what you need is some minority ownership. That's what you got to have, because otherwise it just the cycle will never stop. It won't stop. And you know, I applaud the effort, I guess, but they're going to vote on this thing today. Do you really think you should move up 16 picks because you hire a black coach? Really?
It seems kind of ridiculous.
It does.
To tie it directly together. But, I mean, they're trying to think of real world ways to get people to bite and say, you know what? Let's do it this way. And I don't know that the league will say no. We'll see. We will see. Guys who have coaches on the hot seat are like, my vote is yes. The Texans are like, no, we've got our coach for the next 6 years, 7 years. Why would we make it? We've got our coach and general manager for the next 7 to 12 years. Why would we make any changes?
Yeah. I mean, hey, the Texans were in the forefront. Rick Smith, thanks. Thanks. And I've always, this Bob McNair prisoner stuff and what, it's just that to me was just unbelievable. Bob McNair put his legacy. What is Bob McNair? Is Bob McNair going to be remembered for Cogen? Is he going to be remembered for all the money he made?
He's going to be remembered for what you called him, old white guy.
Well, yeah. He's going to be remembered as an old white guy who owned the Houston Texans. How did the Texans do under his ownership? You know what we think of Jim Crane? Wow. You know what we think of Les Alexander? Wow. You know, those guys won championships. Those guys were directed, and it starts at the top, and those guys directed organizations to win. What do we think of Drayton McClain? Not so much. Not nearly as good, right? Although he did bring the Astros to the forefront for years, but they just couldn't get over the top because of, well, Draytonism. So what do we think of Bob McNair? Well, Bob McNair put his legacy in the hands of an African-American and said, run my team, and let him make all those decisions.
Hey,
and so to
see,
say that
I've been called
racist,
a lot of things, all right? I've never been called an African-American, all right?
Well,
wait a minute now.
Well, as soon as he figured that mistake out, he fixed it.
And not for nothing about Jim Crane. Jim Crane entered our world under some questionable circumstances with his alleged hiring practices before. So
I wasn't talking about that.
I was talking about him winning.
What I'm saying is his winning removed some of that potential stain that was on him before he got here. Because if he wasn't winning, people would point back and say, yeah, well, he's that guy.
The first couple of years were rough on him with the TV situation the way it was, with not spending money on slap nuts free agents, and then you know, people taking a look at his with the lawsuits against him at that particular time. It was a rough start for Jim Crane. Kind of got wiped out, and then all of a sudden, after the trash can stuff came out, I saw people saying, "Wait a minute, what was the deal on the hiring thing again?"
Yeah. Well, let's not forget. Did he not put an African American in charge, Bo Porter? Thank you.
Sacrificial lamb, Bo Porter.
Thank
for sure.
you.
For sure.
Cecil Cooper. Thank you.
No, that was Drayton.
Cooper? I don't think he heard.
That was Drayton.
I don't know. So I'm just, well.
I was the one who was the forward thinker on that one, John. I was woke. I had the first Japanese American player in baseball.
No.
Kazuhiro
really
Max Sasaki.
Well.
I had the first heavyset person at general manager, Timmy Papura, because I do not. Heavy set Shane, I am woke, John. I had the first woman, that one lady.
What one lady?
I can't remember her name. Pam something.
Pam.
Yeah, Pam.
Yeah, Pam. She was also on The Office.
No, that's a different.
No,
her name's
a
really Pam. Jenna Fisher, by the way. It's not Pam.
No.
Well, that old gal was a good gal.
No, one of the vice presidents of the Astros.
That's right. Tell her, John. Tell him, John. That
Pam,
one gal.
P- Pam, I forget her name.
Gardner.
Pam Gardner. That's right. Pam Gardner. Well done.
What did she do again?
She was a very nice person, too, by the way.
No, she wasn't. Not that's not what the scuttlebutt was.
Well, to me, she was, and that's all I care about.
Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm not wrong, but I think the scuttlebutt was she wasn't super nice all the time.
I don't think so.
Really? Okay,
so,
I might be wrong. Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. Maybe I'm just thinking of Drayton.
Maybe you are thinking of Drayton.
I might just be thinking about Drayton.
759.
I am woke. Jason Cooper, woke.
Look how he's able to deflect that his league is so racist, though. They can't even hire an African-American without draft picks.
Okay. It's really an embarrassing display.
It is embarrassing.
At least I got a league.
8 o'clock.
Not everyone's suing ownership.
Oh, really? Oh, so Oliver Saints fans aren't suing Roger Goodell?
Can I get my paycheck? No, you're fired with cause. What cause? You texted with the wrong phone.
I think that Antonio Callaway thing we weren't fans of, too.
I would never have somebody of bad character in my league.
Signed
all of wrestling.
Yeah.
8 o'clock, ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.